Our second respondent is professor of English and writer in residence at Auburn University. He was educated at Vanderbilt, that seems to be a theme running through this conference, and has received the Suwannee Review Fellowship, the Rockefeller Foundation Fellowship, and the Guggenheim Fellowship. Of course, he's primarily known to us as one of America's leading novelists, and his novels include The Innocent, Forest of the Night, A Buried Land, An Exile, which was made into a movie starring Gregory Peck and Johnny Cash, Tuesday Well as I Walk the Line, and more recently, A Cry of Absence and Passage Through Gehenna. A frequent question arising at considerations of Southern literature is this, does the Renaissance continue? And the evidence that's pointed to with most regularity and authority is the fact that Madison Jones still writes, and we are pleased to have him with us today.
I think everything has been said about Southern writers. I do know one thing. If I see any Gnostics coming, I'm going to run. We have heard a lot of good things about Southern writers, and I guess they apply to me, don't they? I wish I had as much optimism as is implied in the statements about Southern writers and Southern writing for the future. But I know a lot of writers, and I don't see so much of what Marion and Tom have been talking about as being present anymore. Look, for instance, Truman Capote. Is he a Southern writer? I would say if there are any Gnostics around, he surely has a strong claim on that identity. William Styron, for instance, a very gifted writer. But what can he find to write about? He writes about, the latest book is about partly about the death camps, Auschwitz and so forth, and Germany in World War II. Then John Barth, he's from Baltimore, I believe, and I guess has claimed being a Southerner. He says it's impossible to write novels anymore. I just wonder how much is still left of what the Southern writer had. Something, certainly. But, you know, it's a strange thing, a paradox, I guess. I've often thought about, we all in the 60s in the South went through a great crisis, as everybody knows. The end of segregation was upon us. And I've often thought about the fact that for all the evils of segregation, nevertheless, it was a kind of a means of maintaining in concrete, fleshly form a great many things that probably would have died out long ago, a great many good things, a great many feelings. We hark back to old attitudes, old ideas, and so on, in great measure in defense of ourselves. In defense of our maintaining an old practice. But I don't think everything is gone, but certainly look at Atlanta, Georgia. Look at the great cities. Look at the countryside, which is relatively abandoned, where so much of what we were came from. All these things television, et cetera, have certainly militated against the kind of consciousness that's been described so eloquently. I think maybe when I start thinking in my own case, being a bit older, because I'm still counted a young writer, you're still a young writer till you're what, 75, it seems to me. I'm not that old yet. When I start thinking back to the things that caused me to become a writer, I draw a blank, really. I have to make up some reasons why I became a writer. And I suppose maybe my own experience is somewhat similar to most, or many. It couldn't be because I came from a literary background. Lord knows, my family thought the writing of literature was the writing of any kind except the letters and so forth was eccentric. And one who wrote poetry was, insane, I think. At best, effeminate. I tried to point out when I began to write and was looked at cockeyed by people in my family, I tried to point out, a lot of these people who've written fine things were, I would say things like Aeschylus was a distinguished soldier, for instance. And, various ones were very masculine and so on, but that didn't help. It certainly wasn't my family background. I think maybe it had a lot to do with simply my grandfather, who certainly was not literary, but who was an old man who sat around and read and used to read to me from the Old Testament. So ever since, at least in recent years since I've begun to think about the matter, when I'm asked who was the greatest literary influence on you, I usually answer Moses, because my grandfather always read to me from the Old Testament, those wonderful stories, the greatest stories ever told, Joseph and his brother, and so on. The Bible and so forth was a powerful influence on me, and I think it was on a great many Southern writers. Now, old people that you lived with were terrifically important to us. My grandfather was born in 1856. He told me, and he was a kind of an amateur student of the Civil War, and he told me so many things, so many stories of the war, and worked me up into a tremendous lather about the whole business. I think maybe it induced a passion of the sort that a great many Southerners experience, not only because of the war, but a great many other things. There's always, of course, been a defensiveness about it that creates a passion, often a useless and foolish one. Comes down even to athletic contests. I think Southerners want to win the football game worse than anybody else. You know, we want to beat those Yankees. this defensiveness has had a part in creating a certain passion and pressure and so forth in Southern life that in the case of people who were inclined in the literary directions, were further impelled by this kind of a condition. The Bible, the sense of the past, the sense of defeat, uncertainties lying under the surface All these things, I think, contributed something to the flowering of Southern writing. It makes me want to fly. Well, I think maybe I was supposed to talk for 5 or 10 minutes, and I believe maybe I have talked for my 5 or 10 minutes. Okay.